Excuse me. Welcome aboard. We're here. Again, somebody turned off some of my buttons. You know how I get when, Paul, when somebody turns off my buttons. And somebody turned off some of my buttons, so I was trying to get everything operational there. Paul Costanzo joining us on the program as we open up on a Wednesday. We'll be here until 6:30, and then we'll have a Michigan basketball game for you tonight as they are at Rutgers. And then tomorrow we'll have the Michigan State game from Nebraska. And you sent me a text earlier today that you are no longer in the prediction business as far as the Big Ten goes. But we know that this is the way it goes every year because it's such a tough league. They just knock each other off.
Yeah, and this year has been absolutely insane with that. And, I mean, looking, Maryland looks like the best team and looks like they're the one that is out in front of everybody, although I guess give that a week. But behind them, I don't know. I mean, good luck sorting them out. And we talk about it a lot, about how deep it is and how competitive it is, which makes it a lot of fun. But I swear, every time I talk to you, I say something, and then 2 days later, whatever it was that I said is proven completely wrong. So, and I had to, I'm sorry, we had the two little ones screaming at each other about 2 minutes ago, so I apologize for calling a little later than normal.
That's right, because they can't make up their mind about who's going to win the Big Ten either.
No, they can't. They can't. Maddie's big on Penn State, and Olivia is saying Maryland. So, yeah.
She just likes turtles.
She actually does. I didn't even connect those dots. But,
yeah. all right, Michigan and Rutgers tonight. A couple weeks ago, I actually would have probably said Rutgers at home will be a tough game, but Michigan seems to have found that mojo that they had early in the season again now, which is probably, this is probably a good time of the season to start playing well with March just around the corner.
Yeah, I mean, they've definitely seemed to be hitting their stride at the right time. You know, Isaiah Livers coming back has been, you know, the big thing for them, of course. But, you know, they also, I think that beginning of the season, you got a new coach and there's excitement and momentum, and then you hit a little bit of the lull where there's an adjustment period, plus you lose your best player. So they went through a lot there in the middle season. So their ups and downs make sense to me, at least. Although Livers, I think, is a game-time decision. I don't know if it's close enough to game time where they've made that decision for tonight's game. So obviously, if he doesn't play, that makes it quite a bit more difficult. But, I mean, they've got a chance to pick up a real nice road win here and continue this momentum.
See, to me, they kind of have the makeup or the blueprint for success. I know Michigan State is good, Paul, but we know that if something happened to Cassius Winston, the Spartans aren't going anywhere. He's the heart. He's the central nervous system. He's what makes everything else work. And other guys who are good primarily because of him. Where at Michigan, I look at it, and yeah, you know, Livers is important. Xavier Simpson is important. Teske's important. Franz Wagner is important. But that's my point. Yeah, Eli Brooks, I mean, it seems like it's somebody different every game for them. There's more balance. There's less reliance on one guy to get the job done.
Yeah, you're 100% right. And, you know, this is something that we talked about a couple of weeks even with, we were talking about Michigan State trying to find that next scorer, right, after Winston and even Tillman, and how that's been a struggle. Whereas Michigan, at the time when Livers was still kind of not fully back yet, you know, they had a bunch of guys scoring around 10 points a game, and that is what is now a strength for them, especially with Livers back. You know, they are balanced, and they are a team that can count on a lot of guys. And when you get to this point of the season, when guys are tired and, you know, there's a lot going on and the games get bigger, you can't always just rely on the same guy all the time. So I do think that is certainly helping Michigan at this point.
So, and that's kind of why I'm leaning towards the Wolverines tonight at Rutgers, even though I know it's hard to win in the Big Ten. And this is not Rutgers football, people. Rutgers basketball is a little different animal. So this is not a pushover game. I don't know that there is a pushover game on the road in the Big Ten, but it's a different story for me tomorrow night if Michigan State doesn't win at Nebraska. That, to me, seems like now I'm starting to wave the red flag and go, wait a minute, now I am concerned.
Oh, yeah, that would be a horrible loss. Nebraska and Northwestern are the two teams. If you don't win those games as a Big Ten team, you put yourself in a really rough spot because every other game is so hard. It's a must-win game. It's a game that they should win, and it's a game they should win fairly easily. It's one of those games where you think, okay, we can get some momentum going and get some things working in our favor again. So, yeah, I think that there's certainly a yellow flag being waved right now in East Lansing, and if they lose in Nebraska, the red one would be justified.
If I were to have asked you at the beginning of the season when State was ranked number one that we would be headed into the final weekends in February. I mean, next week's the last week of February. So we're headed towards March, and Michigan and Michigan State, neither one is in the top 25. Would you have believed that statement?
No, not at all. This State team, I mean, and I think that we don't think about it so much because, you know, the tournament is the end-all, be-all, right? But the disappointment for what they were to what they are now, or what they were supposed to be, I guess, it's pretty remarkable, like, how far they've fallen just this season. I remember as soon as last year ended, everybody looked at them like, well, that's the team to beat next year. I mean, this is not something that kind of came up out of the blue or there was just nobody there to put there. Michigan State was the team, and it certainly has not come to fruition. And it's one of those things, too, where we keep waiting for them to figure it out. And some games it looks like they kind of have, and then the very next night that they're on the court, they haven't. To answer your question, no, I would not have believed it. I don't think many, if anybody, saw this coming.
And I don't like to make excuses for anybody, but I would say the Spartans do have some excuses. I mean, Josh Langford, that was devastating. Certainly. For them. Yeah. We probably are talking about them differently, and they are probably a top 10 team if he plays all year and is healthy. The Cassius Winston situation, I mean, sometimes I think we forget his brother committed suicide this mm-hmm. basketball season, like what within days of them playing against each other. The toll that's got to have on him. I mean, it's hard to come out and grind through a Big Ten season with that on your heart. Maybe in a lesser extent, but they had a transfer. Was it Hauser?
Yeah, Joey Hauser.
That they thought was going to play for them at least some this year, part of the season for them, down the stretch for sure, and that didn't happen. So, I mean, that's three pieces to the puzzle, three big pieces to the puzzle for Tom Izzo. And then you throw in that Arnes hasn't played well this year. Henry's been inconsistent. Rocket Watts only recently started scoring. Who's the other, the big kid?
Kitty.
Bingham.
Oh, Bingham. Yeah.
You know, like inconsistent play from that, kind of explains to me why the Spartans are where they're at.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like they've had inconsistent play with anybody beyond Cassius. I mean, and Tillman to a certain extent, although that kind of, by saying that he's not always inconsistent, that means he's inconsistent, isn't it? I guess that's the definition of the word, but those are all valid, I think, excuses for sure. But at the same time, I mean, falling from first to out of it, and losing, you know, losing road conference games. I mean, those are things that happen. Losing a tight game at Indiana or Wisconsin, I understand that completely. Some of the home games, though, that they're losing are, you know, and the way that they're losing some of them, I don't know. It's just been weird. It's been a weird year, and maybe that just goes back to everything that you said. But it'll be March in a couple weeks, and they have a chance to make us completely forget about all of it. So that's the beauty of college basketball season.
Yeah, that's true. And again, how we talk about teams generally is based on how they played their last game. So
yeah,
they win on Thursday, and on Friday, people will be talking positively again about them again, and so on and so on until their next loss. How soon do you start your bracketology?
How soon do I start mine?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm
like, are you already working on it and worried about it, or are you just like, well, that stuff will come out and I'll look at it then?
No, I look at it, especially because, you know, I root for a bubble team. Obviously, I can't even call Notre Dame a bubble team. They're on the outside looking in of the bubble, so I do check it to see if they're like last four out, next four out. But I do keep an eye on, you know, where teams are. I like to see what the matchups could possibly be, while at the same time knowing that that's not what it's going to look like when they draw up the actual bracket. But yeah, I definitely pay attention to that.
What do they call it now? The first four. Do you look at that as if you get into one of those games, you've made the tournament, or do you have to win one of those games before you feel like you've made the tournament?
I feel like you have to win one to make it really feel like you're in the tournament. I mean, of course, if you're playing in one of those games, you made the tournament technically, but the tournament for me starts on that Thursday. So this year, which would be what, the 19th. So that's when, that's the tournament. The other games are they're play-in games.
Right? But what I don't understand about it is that they're not all for, it's not for the 4-16 seeds, which is what it should be.
Well, the counter argument there though is all the 16 seeds are teams that won conference tournaments and earned automatic bids. So you do have a couple of those games, right? But then you have the at-large games too, where they're playing to get in. I feel like it should be all the 11 or the 12 seeds, or all the 11 seeds, or whatever it is, those last at-large teams to earn their way in. Because those edge of bubble teams, I mean, they're typically at the edge of the bubble for a reason. So then you reward the teams that win their conference tournament by putting them in that first weekend, whereas you make these other teams play their way in that haven't clinched anything yet.
See, that's why I ask the questions, because Paul Costanzo explains it to me. Good stuff, Paul, and thanks as always.
All right, thank you, Dennis.
All right, we'll talk to you. There's Paul Costanzo. He is a weekly addition to the program, and we always enjoy talking to him. Take a break, and then we'll be back. Going to 6:30 today, so stick around.